So I didn't know that they were the beats that I was trying to hit, or that that was the mirror moment in the middle of the book where a character made a different decision. And I think what I learned through that process was I needed to more trust that I knew what I was doing while I was drafting, and then depend more on craft for the editing process.
Welcome to the Wish I'd Known Then podcast, where we focus on how authors found success, looking at strategies that have taken them to the top of the bestseller charts, as well as what they've learned from their mistakes. Because being an indie author is more than knowing the latest marketing trend. It's about being innovative and creative and learning from your mistakes.
Welcome to the Wish I'd Known Then podcast. I'm Sarah Rosette.
And I'm Jamie Albright. And this week on the show, we have
S.L. Hansen.
Yes, we do. It was a great interview.
Yeah, we talked to SL or Stephanie. We have to call her Stephanie during the interview.
Yeah.
We talked to her about how she incorporated writing into her routine with a full-time job and how she leaned into her Clifton strengths to learn to draft her books faster. And lots of productivity stuff. We saved this, basically.
We did save it because,
for January. Because we thought it would fit better in January than December when all of our schedules are just like insane. And now everybody's probably trying to get back into the routine.
Right.
Yeah, so that's coming up soon. We really enjoyed talking to her.
It was really fun. I think you guys are going to love it. So what's been going on with you?
Well, I still feel like we're not in a routine after the holidays. This is the last crazy time out of time week. And I did get some stuff done. I took Monday to just like kind of clear things out from last year. And I did switch to zero accounting, if anybody's like looking at that, like, because I have used Wave app. And I switched to Xero because Xero will categorize PayPal imports and don't have to, and they'll do the fees. Like you don't have to separate out. So I've been doing more direct sales. And so that's more accounting stuff that I was having to separate out. I was dreading it. So I switched over to that. I really like it.
Good.
So did stuff like that. I kind of had a little like let down. I always have an after holiday let down. And so I'm feeling better though now. It's the end of the week and kind of getting back to normal a little bit.
I know.
I also did a box set that I hadn't done before to create a collection of the first three books in the historical series so I can get that out. Something I've been meaning to do like forever, just haven't done. So stuff like that.
Great. That's awesome. That's awesome.
What about you? What have you been doing?
Well, I've been recovering from surgery. I had surgery just a little over a week ago. So on the 29th. So, yeah, hadn't done a whole lot other than
you
that.
You should not be doing a whole lot.
No. Well, it's funny because in the, you know, the notes, it says we don't necessarily recommend aggressive resting. And I'm like, well, what
other time is there?
Yeah. It's, I only know how to aggressively rest. I don't know. Anyway,
I love that. I'll be using that.
Yeah.
I'm going to aggressively rest now.
Exactly. So, but I have been planning. I have a plan to move forward. It's kind of different than I thought it would be, but I feel really good about it. I feel really, I mean, one of the things I haven't done that I normally do is run it up the flagpole and see how many people salute it. And I have talked to a few people just that know, kind of have done this before. And, but other than that, I'm not taking opinions. This is what I'm going to do. And then we'll see how it works. But I'm excited to start giving back to my readers. And I'm just going to put it that way. When I get more into it and I see that it's working, we can talk about it. But right now, I just kind of want to hold it close and work on it. So anyway, other than that, that's about it. I have been doing some consulting. I did the branding special in December. And it went really well, and people seem to really like it. And so I've still got some of those clients, you know, that I'm doing, and then I'm doing a few consultations. During the there was some crazy negativity. I don't even know when it was, a week ago or so. And I, or a couple of weeks ago. So I just decided I was going to give away a consultation, put it in our group. And then mm-hmm. on my Facebook. So I did that one today and that was fun. And, Donna Madden and I had a great conversation, but yeah, other than that, just recovering from surgery. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's good. You should be taking it slow. Yeah. Maybe not aggressively resting, but taking it slow.
No aggressive resting. Yeah. That's crazy.
Well, we do have a new supporter.
Yeah,
so
shout out amazing.
To Bonnie Portier. I hope it's how you pronounce your last name. If not, I'm sorry, Bonnie. And she picked the heart for her symbol. So thank you for that. And thank you to
Bonnie.
All our supporters. We really appreciate it.
We do.
And yeah, we will be doing something for supporters this month. I'm not sure yet what it will be.
Yeah.
Because, we like to fly by the seat of our pants.
Yeah. And we're not aggressively thinking about it either. That's so right. There you go.
We're not aggressively planning or resting.
Oh, my gosh.
So, anyway, so I guess that's about all we have this time,
right? Yeah, I think so. So we should get on with the interview. Happy New Year, y'all.
Yeah, Happy New Year. And here is S.L. Hansen. Well, today we are really excited to talk to Stephanie Hansen. Hi, Stephanie. How are you?
I'm great. How are you guys this morning?
We're good. We're good. Just ready to talk to you about some really good stuff. Hopefully we walk away more productive and more motivated.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, let me read your bio and we'll get right into it. S.L. Hansen writes thrilling mysteries set in national parks, combining her passion for outdoor adventure and storytelling. After publishing her first novel in 2021, she hacked her writing process and transformed her writing journey from a 6-year trek to a 1-year expedition, which we love that. Mm-hmm. A professor by day, she loves helping others achieve success. She blames her ravenous appetite for books on her mom, who took her to the public library every Saturday as a child. And she's known for casually asking hiking partners where she might find the best place to dispose of a body on a trail. She often finds herself hiking alone. And I certainly feel that. So just last night, I was talking to somebody and they said they were on the waiting list in their neighborhood to get a golf cart because they live in a golf cart neighborhood. And they said, somebody has to die. We're next and we get the next slot. And I was like, oh
my
God, motive for murder. Hold on. I have to write that down. Everybody's like looking at me like, you're so weird. I was like, but this is good. So I totally feel that.
It is.
Yeah. You have to be careful what you suggest to a mystery writer, right?
Yeah, like, that's right.
You never know what they're thinking.
Yeah. I always keep one eye on Sarah all the time.
It's always the quiet ones, right? Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It is. So tell us how you got into writing.
Well, I do a ton of technical writing, obviously, in my day job as a professor and faculty member. But how I got into the fiction writing journey, I can see clear as day. So it was December of 2015, and I woke up in the middle of the night because there was a thunderstorm. And I'm in central Iowa, and it's not normal to have a thunderstorm in December. It should have been snowing, which is quiet. And so I just kept, kind of thinking about that. And I don't know if you guys do this, but sometimes I just tell myself a story to go back to sleep. So I'm laying in bed in the middle of the night, listening to the thunder. And I tell myself this story, and it's kind of a little meet cute between a couple who meets on a gravel road. Cause I live out on a gravel road in the middle of nowhere. And, eventually fell asleep. And when I woke up the next morning, I could just see it clear as day. And I could just see that story, and I couldn't put it away. And it happened to be winter break for us. So over break, I wrote a good part of that story. And then it took about 6 years to actually get to the point where during the kind of the middle of the pandemic, I was able to finish that book and get that out and self-publish my first book. And I had the bug. So I couldn't put the pen down and took in all the information. I went back and looked. I think I first started listening to the Wish I'd Known Then podcast in November of 2020. And that I published my first. Yeah. Yeah. And so you were definitely one of the first podcasts that I started listening to in this space, and published my first book a month after I turned 40. So in April of 2021, and then kind of tried to hack my writing process, figure out how to do that a little bit faster than 6 years. And so my second book, I finished in about a year. And so I published the first book in my new Harper and Reese thriller series in May of 2023.
That's great. Yeah.
That is wonderful. And that first book, sometimes it takes a long time because you're figuring out so many different things. So we'll get into like figuring out how to do things more efficiently or like how to work better with your strengths and your process. But so first, though, let's ask some of our favorite questions. So what is your definition of success?
So I think my definition of success is where independence and impact have an intersection. So I was raised to be incredibly independent. My parents probably still regret that, right? Because So lots of life choices that I've made because I'm incredibly independent, and I love that. It's part of why I've chosen the career that I have. And I feel like success is where independence and impact can meet. And because I have significance as one of my top five strengths. So the ability to go out and make impact, help others, that's a really important part of kind of every decision-making process. I put it through the filter of, is this something that's going to have impact on my industry? Is it going to have impact on my students? Is it going to have impact on me and my family? And kind of use that to make my decision. So I think success looks different for everybody, but I think that's what mine looks like.
Awesome.
Yeah. Very good. Yeah. I don't know that my parents regret that they raised me to be independent, but my husband certainly does. Of course, it's why he liked me in the first place. But now when I just go off and make decisions and then come back and go, oh, by the way, I decided we were going to do this or that, he's like, excuse me. So, yeah.
Absolutely. That's the problem, the good thing about independence, right? You do pretty much whatever you want. But the bad thing about independence is that sometimes you have to explain to others why you did that thing that you just wanted to do.
That's where that saying, like, it's better to beg for forgiveness than ask for permission. Yeah.
That's where that comes in.
I'm definitely a permission asker, and I need to stop. Sometimes I'm like, I stop asking for permission, just do it.
Absolutely.
Well, what do you wish you'd known about writing and craft when you started?
Everything.
Yeah.
Totally get that.
But maybe perhaps more seriously. I think two things. I think one of them was, like you said in my bio, I grew up going, my mom's a huge reader too. And we would go to the local small school library and then the bigger city next door library, like every week, like max out the amount of books that you could check out, right? We come out with arms full of books. And then that's what we would both kind of just hide away and do that all the time. So I credit her like with how much I think story I have internalized over the years. And I think that's one of the biggest things that when I started writing, I didn't give myself enough credit for how much story and craft I had already internalized. I just didn't know what to call things. So I didn't know that they were the beats that I was trying to hit, or that that was the mirror moment in the middle of the book where a character made a different decision. And I think what I learned through that process was I needed to more trust that I knew what I was doing while I was drafting, and then depend more on craft for the editing process. So if I would go back and be like, why is this like, it feels slow. The pacing is off. Oh, it's because my inciting incident's happening too late. I need to chop off those first two chapters or whatever.
But in the beginning, you don't know those terms. Like you're saying, you don't know what inciting incident is and all that. Yeah.
No. And I think that that was really useful to, and that was part of like number one input, right? For strength. So I'm listening to all the podcasts and I'm like, what are they talking about? Romancing the beats. What is that? And like, you know, you go Google things and take in all the information. So I think that was really helpful. I think the other one, maybe almost related to marketing, would be, but still craft, the idea that I didn't write my first, obviously, sales description for my first book until after I'd written 150,000 word book. And then I was like, how the crap do you distill this down to like two sentences? So on my next book, I wrote the log line for that book. So I wrote the log line for Cold Woods before I even started writing it. And I felt like that was my focus point throughout the book. It was like, have I gotten off track here? My whole story was about this rogue FBI agent, right? Like, how do I keep coming back to that? So I think that was a useful change.
Right. Yeah. There's a lot of people recommend doing that you write your description or your hook or whatever first. And I know that I was trying to think. Someone did that. It was, I can't think of his name, Adam Croft, I think, who said, like, the log line was, would you kill your wife to save your daughter, or something like that? And that was the whole book. Like, and I was like, I have tried that and I found it very hard. So, like, how much of the, it was mainly just the concept you had, or was it like, did you have the whole idea kind of in your head when you composed the log line?
Yeah. So actually, so I wrote down my log line. So I'll read this just kind of short. So this was the log line for Cold Woods, kind of the thing that was spinning around in my head. So when an FBI agent is banished to Glacier National Park, she discovers a serial killer has been using the park as their personal hunting grounds. Can she overcome her biggest fear to stop a killer and save her career?
So yeah, there's a lot in that. There's a lot of story, character, plot. There's a lot in that.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I know the first part was the thing that I was like, what if somebody who hates the woods had to work in the woods? And what if she is a Enneagram 8, which I happen to be, like, don't ask permission, ask forgiveness, but maybe not even that kind of FBI agent, right? Like, she's hard charging and she kind of got herself in a situation and she's like, her boss is like, you're going to go here to Glacier and be out of sight, out of mind. And the first thing she does is discover a body. And he's like, this is not out of sight, out of mind. Right. So I think the whole story kind of flowed from there.
That's great. That's a great premise though. I love that.
Yeah. And I think that's helpful too, to hear it. Cause then you can see like, oh, okay, you do have the bones of the story there to work with. So I think that's great. Yeah. Well, that's a great, craft and marketing tip. Do you have any other things about marketing that you wish you'd known?
I think with marketing, I mean, like a lot of your guests say, you know, the fact that you have to do it seems to come to a surprise to most of us. Yes. who would rather write than market. But I don't know that I'm great at it, but I actually love thinking about marketing things. So I use tools like Canva, and I could spend hours on there just doing new designs, thinking about new things. I think one of the best pieces of advice I've heard from a lot of different, you know, podcasts and stuff have been, don't try to do all the things. So I'm not on all the social media. I really like to take pictures. I've kind of always been an amateur photographer. So Instagram was kind of the one that speaks to me the loudest in terms of social media. So I kind of focus on there. You can double hit by just having it also put your stuff on Facebook too, without really having to do any work on Facebook. So I kind of like that. But I do love creating things in Canva, and I'm holding back from doing ads until I have the first three books in this series. And then I'll try to do, you know, the things like go after a BookBub and do, you know, the ads really aggressively to a reduced price first book in series and stuff like that. But I'm kind of telling myself like, it's not really worth spending a lot of the money right now, except for some maybe promo stacking when the new books come out.
Makes That's sense. Smart. Yeah.
I think right now that is smart because things are a little bit, wonky. That's the technical term. They're wonky with ads and with just exposure and the industry. And I think that's smart right now. I don't always say that, but I think that's a good plan right now.
Well, and I think when I'm ready to jump into ads, there's so many good resources out there now, right? Like Mark Dawson stuff and lots of other things. So I can already, and even like, so I'm a huge, I use ChatGPT for a lot of things. I have ideation in my top strengths. So I love having that as a brainstorming partner. And it's really fun to sit down and say, let's work through ad copy. I mean, that thing is unfreaking believable at the ad copy, right? So if you're struggling to take the big premise and nail it down, I think that that's one of the things that it can be really useful for authors.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
Good tip.
So what assumptions did you make at the beginning of your writing career, and looking back, did they turn out to be right or wrong?
I think I assumed that once I had done something one time, I would remember how to do it a year later when I was resubmitting the book.
It's amazing how those little details just vanish away, right? Yep.
Oh my gosh. I feel that every time. That's so funny.
Yeah. I think that's so true, right? You go to you're like, Kobo, I knew how to do this website one time. Amazon, I knew how to do this. Like, has this changed since I was here last? Or I just don't remember it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Things do change.
That is the problem with releasing farther apart, yeah, things do actually change between, especially on KDP. So, yeah, that's funny.
Yeah, I heard somebody give a tip one time that they said, like, go ahead and, like, do like a Loom video or, you know, record your desktop as you, when you start doing things, just start recording everything. And then you'll have those for later if you need to go back. And I never have the presence of mind to do that.
Oh, man, that's a good tip, idea.
You know, and even if it has changed a little bit, it would give you something to follow. And then later on, when you have help, you can just say, hey, here's this video. Go watch this. And you don't have to type everything up. So
that's a great
idea. I wish I'd known.
Yeah.
Somebody should make a podcast about that.
Right.
Yeah. Well, what's the most important lesson you've learned, do you think?
So again, number one inputs, I'm always reading and listening and taking things in. And I think one of the biggest things is to realize what advice is for you and what advice is not for you.
Yeah, I think very smart.
Maybe two pieces to that. One would be one of the best things I did was join a writing group because I'm high in competition too. And let me tell you, I was not going to go to that meeting and not have pages, right? Be like, here you go. I definitely wrote this 20 minutes ago, but it's here. Right? But sometimes you get a piece of advice and it's like, I don't feel that. And so I don't think you want to, you know, not still trust yourself. Like you definitely want to be open to advice, but you need to know what works for you and what doesn't. I think the other thing is, like a lot of us, I can definitely have shiny object syndrome. And if somebody is talking about their success that they've had, and you're like, oh, I should also absolutely start my own marketing page and do direct sales, and I should probably do a Kickstarter and like whatever else is the thing du jour. And, you know, like I said, I was over 40 by the time I published my first book. So I think I brought a little bit of maturity to the game and I was able to be like, that is super cool, but I'm never going to have time for that, or that's not going to be the right fit for me. Mm-hmm. And I do feel like we might have some young people coming into self-publishing or just writing that might just spend a lot of their time and energy chasing things because they haven't figured out what's right for them.
Yeah.
Right.
And you also have a full-time job, right? So you're balancing full-time work, author. So yeah, it's hard to do everything anyway, like if you're a full-time author, but I can't imagine how much more limited your time is with trying to do all that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's one of the things that I feel like I don't often hear on a lot of the shows either. So a lot of time it is full-time author, but I think there's also quite a few people who do have full-time day jobs and are trying to do this. And so they're not going to be dropping 6 books a year or doing the rapid publishing thing. But we all still want to learn the craft and we want to get better at it. And we want to figure out how to make it fit into our lives.
Yeah. I agree. I think that there are far more people like us that write a little slower because of day job things and, or family obligation things. Then we probably know about, because the ones we hear about are the ones that write super fast and they can do it all. And, you know, that's just not for most of us. So those people are amazing and I love them and, you know, all more power to them, but I'm not that person. And I've always said that I'm not that person. So, yeah.
So how do you cope with like, I mean, I think that like, I don't write quickly. I mean, I've sped up some, but like, how do you cope mentally with like seeing, I think that's the hard part, is you see other people releasing really quickly and they do get sometimes more attention than the slower release people. So how do you cope with like, this is how I'm doing it, and that's okay?
I think it goes back to the independence. I don't worry too much about what other people are doing. And I recognize that that's probably more rare than people who are having a lot of imposter syndrome and comparing themselves to others. You know, I don't expect that I'm going to be a 6-figure author in this business. I've got a different job for that, right? This is where I get to bring the creative side. And I mean, actually, there's a million benefits that the creative writing work that I've done has brought to my day job, because I have graduate students that I mentor, and we now have weekly writing sprints, you know, so every week, even though I see those kids every day, every week, we now have a dedicated 90-minute writing sprint where we're all on Zoom. We do an opening go around. What are we working on today? What are you going to try to get done? 90 minutes with the camera on, but we're all on mute and we write. And that was something that I saw other people doing during the pandemic. I started doing that with writing friends. And, you know, doing that with the grad students has really normalized the fact that everybody should be writing all the time. It's not something to do the last second before you finish your dissertation.
As is, you know, probably what a lot of people do.
Or before your deadline. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, if you had to start over today, what would you do differently?
I would pick a genre for my first book and just one.
So your first book had lots of different places it could go?
I realized later, again, advice from podcasts, right? I realized later that authors often are like me and don't have just one genre that we read, but mm-hmm. we probably mm-hmm. should pick one genre to write. Mm-hmm. So my first book, it has suspense, it has mystery, it has a second chance romance, it's got magic, it's got Yellowstone National Park, like it's got so many awesome things. And it is a bear to market because what do you do with that?
Yeah.
First book syndrome. Gosh. It's very funny.
Yeah.
And I think almost everybody, like Jamie was just saying the other day, we recorded a podcast early that's going to go out after this one, that her first book had all her favorite tropes in it, right? Like it had so many. And my first book has, like my first indie book, I put in all the stuff that I couldn't put in my cozies. And so it's like really hard to market.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's because we all, for the most part, we all think, well, this is the book I'm writing. I mean, like, this may be it. I'm probably not writing, or for me, and anyway, it was like, I'm not writing another book. I mean, this one was hard enough. So I just put them all in thinking this is my one shot to please everyone, which I am a bit of a pleaser, even though I'm very independent. I'm a bit of a pleaser too. So, yeah. That's
fine. So with your second book, is that a totally new character, a new series, or how did you handle the second book?
Yes. So the second book, Kenzie Harper is my FBI agent. And so that is a different character from the first book. So it's the starter to a thriller series. So it's a crime thriller, like B plot romance for sure. Cause I'm never going to leave that behind. That's one of my favorite things. And sometimes when I get stuck, I'll be like, I'll just go write one of those scenes and then come back to other things. But, crime thriller all the way. So that one's so much easier, to market. I mean, people listening won't be able to see it, but it's, you know.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
you're right on target with that.
Yeah, you are. Yeah.
Well, let's move into some of the questions. So you were very kind and gave us a download that we can give to our listeners. So let's move into some of the questions that that you kind of provided a download for our readers, our listeners, to kind of dig into how they can like maybe speed up their writing or become more efficient in their writing. So first of all, tell us like kind of how you transitioned into, like you said, your first book took you about 6 years and your next book only took about a year. So what did you have to change or figure out to go to make that change?
So one of the things I was doing in the day job as a professor was doing a lot of work with Clifton Strengths with my graduate students. So in the fall of 22, so last year, I had actually gone and become a certified coach. So I had done all the training. I did that in September, and that was really on my mind. And then we were doing book club with my graduate students, which is something that I've started to do. We should do like a professional development book. So we were reading Atomic Habits by James Clear, which is an amazing book. And so I really had both of those things kind of stirring in my mind. And I have a friend who calls me an idea broker. And I think that's a good way to think of it, right? You're like taking an idea from here and you're bringing it over to something else and maybe putting your own spin on it. And so I decided to do, I had about half of my first draft of Cold Woods done, so my second book. And I decided to do NaNoWriMo, which is National Write a Novel in a Month, and that occurs in November. So you're supposed to do 50,000 words for NaNo in the month of November. And actually in my day job, November is one of the busiest months of the year because I work with cattle and it's kind of a busy time and it's the end of the fall semester when I'm teaching. So I knew it was going to be time crunch, but I really wanted to try to do NaNo. But I decided I wanted to hit the end on the book more than I cared about hitting 50,000 words. So I said, I think it's 40 or 45,000 words, but as long as I get to the end in this first draft in November, I'm going to call it a success. Mm-hmm. So I kind of sat down and looked at my schedule and said, all right, well, if I come home at 5 o'clock at night and the first thing I have to do is, you know, feed the dog and, you know, do this and this, I'm dead, right? My brain is toast. I barely make supper, let alone sit down and do any writing. Yeah. But it was really easy for me to get up early in the morning. I've got old dairy farmer jeans back in the gene pool there. So it's really easy to get up early in the morning. So I decided, okay, I'll get up early in the morning and start writing and try to get my words in then. And so then I was like, when I make my coffee, it's going to be the signal to sit down and start doing the writing. And mm-hmm. so I tried to kind of build these processes, and you link something that you're doing all the time with something that you're trying to develop the habit of. And so in this case, it was, I'm a caffeine addict, so I'm mm-hmm. definitely making coffee every morning. But now, as soon as I do that, I'm going to be like, all right, open Scrivener, sit down, start the work. So I tried to take a combination of my like habit building skills that I was learning from reading Atomic Habits and mm-hmm. the strengths training that I had recently been through and combine those two.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wow.
And so I wrote 45,000 words in the month of November. I hit the end and finished the draft of that book, and then was able to edit that over winter break and have that turned around so I could publish that in May. And I'm doing that again this November with mm-hmm. the second book. And I've just crossed about the halfway mark for both Nano and for the draft to finish book two.
That's terrific. Yeah.
Yeah. Just so great. And go ahead, Sarah.
Oh, I was going to say, it's really smart to take those two things, the habits and the strengths, and combine them. So that's part of what this download is that you've given for us to get to listeners. And one of the things you mentioned in there is rewards, like using rewards, which I love this. So let's dig into this. Mm-hmm. So how did you use that? And how do you think, how would you recommend people figure out what rewards to use for themselves?
So I'm pretty sure you and I are both dark chocolate fans, if I'm correct, Sarah.
Yes.
Yeah, right. So I highly recommend chocolate. So actually, so one of the things that I did was, if I got my word count in for the day, so, you know, whatever it was, 1400, 1500, 1600 words in that morning writing session, if I got it, the first thing I gave myself permission to do was to get a fancy coffee on the way to work. So mm-hmm. I could kind of have that treat. And let me tell you, there's a lot of incentive for that when it's still dark, when you're driving to work at 7 o'clock in the morning, you're like, I really need some espresso right now.
Yeah.
So I think part of that is figuring out what's going to be a reward for you. One of my friends actually suggested, she's like, well, I didn't do this, but it would have worked really well for me, because I'm like super tight with my money. She was like, what if you gave me like $400, and like each week, either I get to keep the $100 that you haven't earned back that week by hitting your goal, or you would have a list of things that I would buy with your money and then have it delivered to your house. And so that would be like a reward, like a big reward, right? That you would get each week. She was kind of joking, but I think I have competition high. I think it would totally work, because I'm not letting her have my money.
Right, right.
You got to get that.
I don't know if I'd want her to order things. I just might want my money back.
That's the thing. You can't get the money back.
That's awesome. Yeah, it kind of like, it reminds me of that program that's the Write or Die, where it's like, you're going to lose your words if you don't keep writing. So like you're going to lose money in this case if you don't keep the words going. So very cool.
Yeah. Money's a big incentive for me too. Yeah. That might work for me too.
Yeah.
So I think the rewards will look different for each person, right? Depending what's really important to them. And I think the important part is probably to have everything from small scale, like I finished that scene, I deserve the piece of chocolate right now, to I've hit my word count. And maybe it's not even that you hit it that day. Maybe it's like, I've hit it 3 days in a row. Because part of the whole habit building thing, like his first law kind of in there that he talks about, is establishing your identity. So if you're trying to quit smoking, it's not, I'm going to quit smoking. It is, I am somebody who doesn't smoke, and you've changed your identity. So I told myself at the beginning of November, I am a professional writer. Like it's not just a hobby. It's not just something I do whenever I feel inspired or feel like I have a little time. I am a writer. I want to make this into a business. I want to be here. And I think that's a huge part of the mindset that comes with making that shift from, you know, I'm just going to do this because it's fun, to I want to make this matter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. and it does change the way you think about everything, right? Your schedule, your, you know, what you're willing to say no to get the words in. Mm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's true. That's true. Because I currently have my grandson, and if I was really in writing mode, I would have to say no to that. You know, I'm still not there yet, but yeah, I get that. Wow. That's.
But for you, it might be the reward is getting
for me.
Yeah. But for you, it might be the reward is getting to hang out with your family. Right, Jamie, because that's right. Obviously something right. That's really important for you. You know, so somebody might say, well, if maybe I'm not going to write every morning, maybe I'm going to write 3 days mm-hmm. a week. And that's moving me mm-hmm. towards the journey of becoming a professional writer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That's true. Well, what about deciding what the best time of day to write is? How did you go about? I mean, I know you just told us that you have these cow milking genes, but.
Which some of us don't have.
I believe you said dairy, but I liked cow milking. But but like, how does a person go about deciding that?
I think one of the useful tools that you can do is to try to like track your energy throughout the day. Mm-hmm. And if you try to do that for kind of a, you know, a typical week, which I realize we don't always have typical weeks and life always happens. So no matter what you do, it's really important to like have some grace with yourself and give yourself permission to say, like one of the things that, he says in that book is like, it's okay to miss one day, but you don't miss 2 days. Cause if you miss mm-hmm. 2 days, then it's easy to start the slide. Right. So like, I've been tracking my words this month for Nano. We're at about the middle of November right now. And I've had one more day that I've hit my goal than the days that I've not hit my goal, but I've had no consecutive days where I didn't hit my goal. Right. So on the day and the days when you don't hit the goal, you know, you just have more words to hit the next day. So that's actually becomes an incentive right. to hit the goal every day because it accumulates.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So I think if you track your energy, right, like I had a grad student once who I swear only worked between 2 a.m. and 7 a.m. Like I would have been dead asleep, but she like that was her prime working time. Right. Mm-hmm. So everybody's different. So if you figure out the time when you have a lot of energy, because Lord knows writing takes a lot of energy, mm-hmm. that's an easy thing to do. For some people, it might just be when you can find the time, right? Maybe it's after the kids right. have gone to bed or it's between work. During Nano last year, I actually was like, if I don't have my writing words in the morning, I have to close my office door at lunch and tell myself I have permission to have 30 minutes to try to hit as many words as possible. And that's not what I do in a normal day, but for that month I did if I hadn't hit my goal.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I like linking it to thinking about it is like, when do you have the most energy? Because mm-hmm. that's really important, especially for writing. Because like if I'm brain dead at the end of the day, that's not a good time. But some people, mm-hmm. they feel like they've gotten everything done that they need to. And now they have time at the end of the day. So it's like what kind of gives you energy. I think that's very smart to think about it that way. Mm-hmm. So another thing you mentioned in the download was the planning for obstacles, which I thought is so smart and something we don't do nearly enough. We don't think about it. So how would you advise people to account for that?
When I started sitting down and kind of visualizing what I thought a good November would look like, what would the success look like for the month of November to finish the draft there? One of my things, I knew I had a family event that was already on the books for the first week. And I was like, there is zero chance, sub-zero chance that I'm going to get any words done that day because I just knew I wasn't going to be in a good headspace. So I actually started Nano on October 31st and then just skipped that one day in November. And I thought, I'm a rule breaker. I don't really care that it's not Nano yet. Like, so try to set myself up for success with that. The other one is, and this is maybe where some of the strength stuff comes in, is I thought about how am I going to go from somebody who writes 2,000 words in a week or sometimes even a month and suddenly think I'm going to hit that kind of level of word count every day and not just crash and burn. So from a strengths-based approach, you know, I think Becca Syme talks about it really nicely when she talks about energy pennies, when you can kind of feed your mm-hmm. strengths. So my top five strengths are input, which means I like to gather all of the facts, but I also like to be helpful to others and turn around and deliver the facts back to the right person at the right mm-hmm. time. And that's mm-hmm. kind of input's superpower. I have significance, so I like to do things that make impact or matter. I have competition, so that one's pretty self-explanatory. Like to beat people, but I like to beat people on their best day. And as I've gotten older, I now just want to make everybody kind of the best version that they can be. Four is relator. So relator is like really deep kind of one-on-one relationships, not a big pool of acquaintances, but kind of a small number of people. And then number five is deliberative. So I'm really, this is the exact process. I'm really serious about my decision-making, right? And kind of try to be thoughtful about it. And sometimes my deliberative kind of looks like a crystal ball, so where I can kind of look a couple of weeks ahead and try to be like, I think this is where the obstacle seeking actually came out, Sarah. And that was that I was like, okay, well, what am I going to do when I have no more content to put in? My creative well is drained. So what I tried to do was say I had to make sure I read every day. I had to make sure I would try to consume a couple of things like a movie or something like that during the week to be able to keep refilling the input. And then the two times during that month that I hit total roadblocks on my writing was when I hit plot holes. And so I knew this year going in, I needed to do more extensive plotting. I'm more of a pantser than a plotter, but mystery writing, turns out you need to know what's happening.
Eventually, if you don't in the middle, then you got to go back and fix it later. So I totally feel that.
Absolutely. So I am trying to embrace the plotter mindset. And actually, if you could see my sliding glass door right now, it is covered in sticky notes, because that's what I did at the end of October coming into November this month, so that I could have kind of a visual of point of view and, you know, what the story was. So I think with the obstacles, I was able to then say, well, I needed to feed the input to prevent, you know, the creative well from drying up. And this year, that's so much easier than last year because of things like ChatGPT. So I can sit down with GPT for 10 minutes and say, I backed my character into this corner, give me five ideas to get her out. And even if I don't like any of them, it always spurs an idea that I'm then like, oh, right, that dead body I had in chapter 9 that I haven't done anything with yet, I could bring that back here. Yeah. That's a true story right there.
True fictional writing story.
I hate it when I have dead bodies laying around and don't know what to do with them.
I know, or totally forget that you killed them in that chapter.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So going back to what you're saying about like options and things, I didn't realize this, that some strengths, it doesn't like, they just need information. Like I'm high input and like, it doesn't matter if it's not good. Sometimes it's like, here's five ideas and you're maybe like, oh, none of those work, but then it kickstarts something else. So sometimes like even just ideas that maybe you don't even use them or they're, you know, not what you need, but they get you going and get you back thinking on your own or something. It's very interesting that that's how that works. But anyway,
well, what I was going to say is there's some people that are listening to this and they're like, excuse me, ma'am, or ma'ams, I want to write faster than that. Like my career depends on me writing faster than that, which is fine. Great. But the things that Stephanie is talking about in this PDF and in this podcast today are things that can help you no matter how fast you want to write. Like they really, I think that this is useful information for everyone, not just somebody that, you know, at this point is not writing full time or whatever, or wants to put out, you know, fast books faster. This is good information. Like I mean, I've been doing this a long time, and the whole tying coffee with writing, like that kind of blew my mind a little bit because I hadn't ever, I had never really thought, oh, I could do that. Cause that's something I do every morning when I get up, you know? So I think it's great. This is great information. Well, is there anything else you think we need to know about planning, you know, planning to be more productive more intentionally productive, maybe is a better way to put it?
So I think that, you know, if you happen to have your strengths or think about getting something like your top five strengths from Clifton Strengths, that can be such a good insight, right? Because like Don Clifton's positive psychology movement, right? When he started Clifton Strengths, the whole thing was to figure out how people get stuff done, right? It's not necessarily who you are. It's how you are, right? It's how you do things. And that can look really different, right? So I'm somebody who I think my colleagues would all say, I get stuff done. I didn't even swear, Jamie. I normally swear when I say that. Yeah. I get stuff done. But I have almost no executing strengths in my top 10. I have one, and it's deliberative.
So,
if anything, it's the slow down, right? Like not the get stuff done. But I've surrounded myself with people who can do a lot of the executing. But also I find different ways to get it done, right? So I knew I needed to finish the draft of that book. I knew that I was looking down the barrel of winter break, which was going to be perfect for editing and not necessarily perfect for writing because of some scheduling. And so I thought, well, if I can get that first draft done, I can lean into my competition. You know, I can lean into when I'm sitting there and saying, what would Kenzie do next? I feel like my relator is screaming, of course she would do the stupidest possible thing here, right? Like whatever's the most reckless thing that's going to piss off her partner. That's absolutely what Kenzie is going to do in this situation, right? And all of those things. So if listeners sit down, look at their top five strengths, see how do you feed them to get, you know, keep that creative process. You know, how do you feed your competition? How do you feed your intellection? You know, Sarah doesn't have competition in her top five, but she's got an election. So she needs to have the time to ruminate. Like, you know, that's how you make good mysteries, right? And so you probably need to do something like look at a line, you know, what's the first line of your next scene the night before so you can dream about it overnight and then, you know, jump into it the next morning or go for a walk. So figure out what works for you and understand that it's not the same as what works for everybody else.
Right. Yeah, that's it's so hard because we love to look at other people and go, oh, that worked for them. So let me apply that to me and try that. But you're right. I have to think about things. And that's like the great thing about strengths, but it's also like part of my essential pain. Becca talks about that a lot, that like it's just harder for me to go faster, which is okay. I've come to terms with it. So but Well, what's the best thing you've done to set yourself up for success?
I had a newsletter from day one. When the very first book went out, I had already set up a newsletter, set up some automations. They were not awesome automations, but they were at least there. Had a landing page and, you know, started to collect newsletter followers from the get-go. I didn't really do a religiously sent out newsletter for probably the first 6 months to a year. But by the second year, I started with Story Origin, and I thought that was really useful. So started to do some newsletter swaps and put some of those things in. And then, you know, even when I only had less than 100 people on my list, I started sending monthly newsletters. It feels like you're shouting into the void, but eventually
it does,
that grew.
But
to,
that's okay.
And, you know, listening to things like, you know, how you use your newsletter, Jamie, to start with your, you know, bride's books and stuff, getting that out there. Like those are great inspirations to say, okay, I know this is going to be some work. I don't know how to do it. And that's the thing, man. I never remember how to do that stuff when I go back now. but to set up a new list.
I know. I'm like, I know we do this one way, but I don't remember. I'm with you.
So I think having the newsletter, having back matter, I set up a reader magnet for that, to pull them in with a bonus short story. And then eventually I wrote a free short story and have that posted everywhere. And then that's what links actually to my very first book. So.
I love that. That's great. You know, I'm all for that for sure. For sure. Well, tell people where they can find out more about you and your books. And we are going to have this PDF available to our listeners. So that's awesome, too. Thank you for doing that.
Absolutely. So my website is slhansonbooks.com, and that's Hanson with an E. And my Instagram is also SL Hanson Books. That's pretty much where you can find all my information. You can join my newsletter there or see the information on my books. And my current series is the Cold Woods, or the first book is Cold Woods, and that is the Harper and Reese thriller series that is going to be set in different national parks in the U.S. for each book.
Nice. Great. All right.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thanks for coming today. And thanks for the PDF. And we'll have all those links in the show notes. And don't forget, our sponsor this month is BookFunnel. You can find their link at bookfunnel.com/WIKT-podcast. And thanks to Alexa Larberg for editing and producing the podcast, and to Adriel Wiggins for doing the admin. We'll see y'all next week.
Bye. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Wish I'd Known Then podcast. We hope this episode inspired you, empowered you, and made you laugh a little bit too. If you loved it, tell your friends about it. And if you feel so inclined, leave us a review. We look forward to being with you again next week.